Where the Bodies Are Buried contains graphic depictions of violence that some listeners may find disturbing. Discretion is advised.
Forget what you've heard about serial killers. Forget the movies, podcasts, and stories in the media of infamous psychopaths like Jeffrey Dahmer and Ted Bundy. I'm going to show you what exists beyond all of that, and you'll hear from the source, the killers themselves. My name is Phil Chalmers, and this is Where the Bodies Are Buried.
That devil is on my side.
Started screaming after I first put the knife into her. All I could think is I wanted them to stop screaming, and that's why so many of them ended up being killed, is because they were screaming.
Joining me is my producers, Adam and Samantha.
The night of July 22nd, 2015, a call came in to the 911 dispatch in Broken Arrow, Oklahoma. When first responders arrived, the first thing they saw were pools of blood on the front porch. Inside, they heard a 13-year-old girl screaming, "Save me, save me." She had been stabbed repeatedly, her throat was slit, and she clung to life. Who could have committed such a horrific act? Robert Bevere, who was only a teenager at the time, did. With help from his brother, he brutally murdered five of his family members. In this episode of Where the Bodies Are Buried, we speak with Robert about these unthinkable crimes that resemble something straight from a horror film. We find out what provoked him and led him to murder his own family, including young siblings. Robert Bevere will forever sit in prison where he belongs, with only time to reflect on what he's done.
Pretty typical questions. How much time do you have on this call?
20 minutes.
Okay, and will you call back then right away, or will you wait?
Yeah, I can call back right away.
Tell people your name and what you're in prison for.
My name is Robert Bevere. I'm in prison for multiple counts of murder and assault.
Who were those victims?
Most of them were my family, my parents, two of my brothers, two of my sisters, and also some staff here at Joseph Harp.
You've killed staff at Joseph Harp?
No. I stabbed a couple staff members here.
Okay.
I'm doing 5 lives without parole for the murders.
Yep.
And I'm doing 4 additional lives for the assaults I've done.
Wow, I didn't know that. Tell me about your childhood, Robert. What was your childhood like?
To really say that it was dysfunctional, because I don't think that my parents were ready to be raising that many kids. I was abused in different ways when I was very young. And I was a bit of a problem child, too. To put it really plainly, I think that I had conduct disorder from a very young age. I was very precocious, so.
You were raised with a mom and a dad, right? You had both parents. You had a mother and a father, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So in my research, I'm going to name the causes of what I've come up with in my books. Most kids in your situation have at least 3 to 5 or 6 of these. So I'm going to walk through it. Fatherlessness, you did have a father, so that's not part of it. Unstable home, you said it was a little bit unstable. Were you the victim of bullying at all, or abuse?
Yes, and that's one of the reasons that all of my siblings were homeschooled, is because I had some experiences when I was in preschool. Not just bullying, but also sexual abuse, and so.
Okay. Were you obsessed with violent entertainment at all?
Well, see, that was more of a problem when I got older, but it seemed to me that part of my problem was, you know, it was glorified from a very young age. That was the kind of stuff that I saw, and my parents used violence to reinforce that they were in control.
Okay.
So I think from an early age I had this misconception about violence being the be-all, end-all of, you know, being an adult or being in control.
Wow.
So, yeah.
Were you obsessed with any weapons at all growing up, like guns or knives or anything like that?
And again, that was something that became a problem when I got older. A lot of people don't know this, but the first knife I ever owned, I bought because my dad had beaten my mom severely, and I had called the police and they never came. So I bought a knife, and I told my brother, and I told my sister too, if he ever does that again, I'm going to kill him.
And how old were you, think, at that time?
Either 15 or 16.
How old were you at the time of the crime?
18.
Did you live in poverty? Was your family poor?
Well, see, that's a tricky one, because we lived like we were, but I know we weren't. my dad had a gambling problem, and I think that's where most of our money went. Our dishwasher didn't work. It was broken down. Our refrigerator was acting funny. Our washer and dryer didn't work. We did our clothes in the bathtub. The house was just falling apart, and nobody was doing anything about it. We only had hot water in one bathroom. It was kind of like a poverty situation, but in a really big house.
Were there any warning signs like cruelty to animals, bedwetting, peeping Tom, voyeurism, anything, setting fires? Was there anything you were doing, those kind of behaviors that would have been a warning sign?
I don't think. The only one I can identify with is bedwetting, and I don't see that that has anything to do with it, because last time I did, I was 12 years old, and when I realized my mom wasn't going to come clean up for me anymore, mm-hmm. I made a decision that I was going to stop doing it, and I never did again.
Did you do any violent drawings or paintings or artwork or anything like that?
No, the artwork that I made in Photoshop wasn't supposed to be violent. It was just supposed to be like schizophrenic. It was kind of like what I was into was making really weird art that wasn't supposed to be violent, but it wasn't supposed to make sense.
Okay.
But I had a whole bunch of pictures. Like, I also made memes, and I was a moderator on several meme pages on Facebook, and I was putting out content even up until I started killing people. I'd been putting out content, and it just kept getting stranger and stranger. First, people liked it, but after a while, they were like, "What the fuck is this?"
Did you make any threats that you would kill someone? I mean, you kind of did. Like, a few years before, you kind of told your brother and sister, "If this continues, I'm going to kill."
I mean, there was other people too. There was this girl that I knew. She was a year younger than me, and she worked at the call center where I worked.
Mm-hmm.
And she had told me that she was being bullied by these kids at school. I asked her if she wanted me to kill him. She said no.
Wow. So did you that was kind of a power thing for you. You learned that growing up, right?
Yeah.
What year did this crime take place, Robert?
2015.
You were 18 at the time.
Yeah.
So that was in 2015. You're 24 years old now, serving life in prison in Oklahoma.
Yeah.
So was there a trigger right before it happening that was like the last straw? What was the trigger that kind of caused you to do this?
That's a really tough question, because there was a number of things that triggered me, and I've never been able to just say this is what caused it. I was starting to get bad scores on my calls where I worked. I used to be like their employee of the month, and it made me feel so bad that I just gave up on, you know, trying to work there. I gave up on trying to be an adult, and so I quit. And after that, it just, so many things. That girl I told you about that I asked her if she wanted me to kill him for her,
mm-hmm.
Got pregnant, and she asked me if I'd buy the pregnancy test for her, and so I wanted to kill her too.
Mm-hmm.
It was stuff like, I was dealing with really bad depression, and that's something I still deal with, is if I'm not taking an antidepressant, I feel really suicidal, but at the same time, it makes me really, really violent. One of the last things that happened was I got up the nerve to Google whether it was legal to buy guns on the internet, and when I found out it was, that kind of got my mind, you know, clicking towards, okay, what can I do with this? And then I actually bought the guns the day I saw my dad grab my little brother Perry and drag him by his shirt down the stairs and throw him on the ground and start kicking him. And he had done something similar to that to me when I was younger, and that made me so mad. I ended up going on Mossberg's website and buying a shotgun, and a few days later I bought two Glocks.
I mean, wow, there is just so much to discuss here. He had obviously like a very violent father, and his father had a gambling problem, and there was, you know, that possible sexual abuse that he talks about from preschool.
Yeah, this guy definitely has all the causes, warning signs that I talk about. He's textbook with the unstable home, the father figure, which is a big connector of all killers, either a no father or a bad father figure. Bedwetting, it's some of the biggest causes and warning signs we see.
Phil, sometimes we see these teen killers, young killers, turn against peers, But here he turns against his family and siblings. Why his siblings?
You know, I couldn't understand that either. He wanted to be a famous mass murderer, and him and his brother had plans to, like, pull a Columbine, they said, and kill, like, 50 people. And I was really stumped on why, instead, he took it out on his family. He had a lot of contention with his family, especially his father, and I think he just kind of lashed out. And in anger, instead of carrying out this big, massive, you know, mass murder spree, he took his anger and rage out on his own family. In this home are seven children. Imagine that. This home is not very large. There are seven children ranging from 2 to 17. And him and his brother are the ones who decided to attack the rest of the family. So they're going to attack seven family members. I'd really be curious enough if everybody had the same stresses in the home, or was it just Robert?
So yeah. The victims were your dad, who was 52, your mom, who was 44, a 12-year-old brother, a 7-year-old brother, and a 5-year-old sister, right?
Perry was 10, but he wasn't growing properly. He was the same size as a 7-year-old.
Okay.
He was 10.
And then you had a couple, your siblings were injured. Well, Crystal was injured. She was 13, and then a 2-year-old was unharmed. Do you have any relationship at all with Autumn, the 2-year-old, or Crystal, the 13-year-old? Do you have any relationship with them at all?
No.
So you don't...
I wouldn't expect to either.
Right, so no contact with them?
No.
Are they being raised, like, by a grandma and grandpa or somebody, or do you know?
No, that's actually kind of a fucked up story. I'd always been told from a very young age that if anything happens to my parents, that we would go live with this cousin of ours. She was like the most stable person in the family. But I found out that after I did that, nobody anywhere in my family tried to come see my sister in the hospital, and she had to go. She and my sister Autumn had to be adopted.
Wow. You did the murders were done with a knife.
I had laid out all my weapons on my bed. I had like paring knife, two hunting knives, and a hatchet. The blade broke on the paring knife when I was stabbing my sister. My mom came in to see what the screaming was, and I grabbed my original hunting knife that I bought when I was 15 or 16, and I started stabbing her with it, but then I threw it aside, and I found out later, apparently my dad or somebody tried to hide it because they didn't know I had other knives.
So what time of the day did this crime take place? Like, what time was it?
It took place a few minutes before midnight.
Everybody's asleep. Yeah. It's late at night. You get up in the middle of the night, and, like, what were the order of the victims?
The only people who were asleep was two of my brothers and my dad. The rest of us, we were still up. We sometimes stayed awake all night on our computers. It was really messed up because I had this plan that I was going to sneak up to the couch where my sister and my mom were sitting in the family room and slit their throats. Instead, while I was getting ready, my sister came into our bedroom, and she was kind of taken aback to see all the weapons and body armor laid out. But she just said, well, you need to clean the kitchen. She started to leave, and I whispered to my brother, keep her in here. I just hurried up and, you know, got my gloves on, got my arm guards on, got my vest on, grabbed a knife and started stabbing her.
And, which sister was that?
Crystal.
She survived.
She survived, yeah.
And then after that, you figured this is it, it's on. And what were the order of your victims?
Oh, I don't understand dudes who say, because I met a lot of dudes in prison who say that they enjoyed stabbing people. Mm-hmm. And that might just be a lot of brouhaha, but honestly, for me, it was a horrible experience. And I was very scared, but I made myself do it. And after my sister started screaming, after I first put the knife into her, all I could think is I wanted them to stop screaming. And that's why so many of them ended up being killed, is because they were screaming. And I just wanted them to stop. So.
And you stabbed Crystal. Did she stop screaming?
No. I believe I stabbed her in the throat. Mm-hmm. And she started screaming. And so I started stabbing her in the chest, and that's when the blade broke. So I just shoved her to the ground. I didn't really think of what was going to happen to her. It had to be horrible for her, worse than all the others, because she survived and she ran out of the house and I chased her across the front yard. And when she fell down, she didn't know it was me. And I picked her up and I was bringing her back into the house. Mm-hmm. She was saying, "My brother did this to me. Please help." I said, "It's going to be all right."
You have 1 minute remaining.
So she ran outside the house. You there, buddy? Hoping he's going to call back again. So we will wait and see if Robert Bivar calls back again.
Phil, something that kept bothering me was, why is it that, like, two siblings crack under all this pressure? You know, you've got Robert, but then you have his brother who's involved in this. But the other siblings are not violent.
In this home, I think the violent person was Robert. I think his brother was just influenced to go along with it. According to Robert, his brother didn't kill anybody in the home.
What exactly was Robert's breaking point? I mean, why did he decide to kill his family, and when was that moment?
You know, I kept trying to ask him that. I was trying to figure out what was the trigger that caused this kid to do this, because we know he'd been thinking about it for some time. We know he'd been planning something. We know he'd been thinking about it. But what made him finally do it? It must have been some kind of confrontation with his father, and something just set him off one day. And he said he had been buying guns, but he hadn't picked them up yet, I think he said. It just seems like it kind of was spur of the moment.
You really were digging. This is the truth. You were like just trying to fucking keep digging, trying to get to that nucleus of what was going on. Was there just a plethora of shit happening?
I mean, I think there was. You know, when you look at my list of triggers, usually there's like 6 major triggers that cause teenagers to kill. Some of them get suspended or expelled. Some of them get arrested. Some of them have a big dispute with their parents, which I think happened here. Some get dumped by a boyfriend or girlfriend. Some have a major bullying incident at school. Sometimes parents will tell their child not to date someone. You look at that trigger list, and I keep asking him, you know, I'm trying to figure out what is the trigger here. And I had to be a confrontation or a dispute with his parents, especially his father, that set him off. I'm still waiting for Robert to call us back from prison. We're going to hear more about that horrific night in July of 2015 when he tragically murdered 5 of his family members. If you're looking for more serial killer and true crime content, check out my YouTube channel at True Crime Phil.
Phil, you know, something that I heard that was truly shocking was hearing Robert say that he actually didn't like the act of stabbing people, and he continued it because he didn't like all the screaming. So that's why he went ahead and killed everybody. Can you explain this a little better? Because this was super hard to understand.
I hear this all the time from killers who say, when I went and actually did the act of stabbing or shooting or whatever they did, it was nothing like I thought it would be. So they watch movies, they watch television, they play these violent video games, and they have this fantasy that they're going to stab someone, they're going to fall down and die, they're going to shoot someone, they're going to fall down and die. And it really never happens like that in real life. And I think once that set in during the course of this murder, once Robert realized that reality is different than his fantasy and that you have to stab someone more than once to kill them. And so he's stabbing multiple people. None of them are dying. And I mean, just imagine the screams, the blood. He's got it all over himself. It must have been a very horrific scene. And he didn't know what else to do, but he knew he had to kind of finish the act. He also wanted them to stop screaming. He said the biggest reason why he stabbed them 28 times, 30 times each, is he wanted them to die as fast as possible so they would stop screaming. And I asked him, I said, "Do you still hear that screaming?" He said, "Every single day." Why do we do this? Why do we discuss these horrific crimes? Why do we rehash these violent acts? The reason we do this is we are trying to learn from these incidents and try to find out why these things happen and how we can prevent them in the future. We also like to do this because we want our listeners to hear this and learn from these stories. It's one thing that we have these tragedies, but it's another if we don't do something about this and learn from these tragedies, these horrific acts will continue. Let's continue talking to Robert Bivar and hear how he tragically murdered his family.
This call is from a correction facility and is subject to monitoring and recording.
Hey, Robert. Hey, Robert.
Phones are a little bit janky here sometimes.
I see that. Okay, so we talked about your sister. So after you left the bedroom with your sister, who was the next victim?
My mom. She heard my sister screaming, and she came running back there to see what was going on.
And was she stabbed, and was she assaulted any other way, or just stabbed?
Just stabbed. She survived for a while, because I never really thought about it at the time, but I tried to stab her in the stomach, and that didn't kill her, and so she survived a long time until I think I got to a point where I think I slit her throat or something. And man, it was just...
Were any of the victims talking to you, Robert? Like, why are you doing this? Or please stop? Yeah. Or what were they saying? Like, what was mom saying to you?
She was she kept screaming, someone please call 911. And she tried to ask me to stop. She begged me to stop. And
Yeah. Who was that after your mom? Who was next?
I chased my sister outside, and then when I came back in, my dad was looking for me.
Okay.
I don't know. Somebody tried to tell me that he must have intended to kill me himself because he didn't call the police. He came looking for me. I ran back to my bedroom, and I grabbed my other hunting knife. Mm-hmm. I just waited for him, and when he came back there, I killed him.
Wow, you overpowered your dad.
Yeah. No, that's something that still baffles me to this day, because I weighed 110 pounds, and he weighed over 330 pounds.
And he was trying to stop you?
Yeah.
Did he say anything in this scuffle?
He didn't say anything at first. I could tell when he came into my bedroom, he was shocked that I had another knife, but he still came at me, and he didn't say anything. But right before he died, he asked me, why are you doing this? And I said, because I must.
Uh-huh.
He said, no, you don't. And,
he really wasn't involved in the attack.
With Crystal, he gave his phone, or he unlocked his phone, and let my other brother Daniel call the police on it, because I know he had a lock on his phone.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that Daniel couldn't have just figured it out just like that, you know, in the midst of a crisis. I think he unlocked it for him, and he wasn't expecting me to come back in. I think he smashed his phone on the floor because he was afraid of me.
Oh, my God. So Robert, with, I guess, the help of his brother, Michael, kills his mother and father, stabs his sister. Explain what happens next.
You know, Robert overpowers his sister. She's the first victim, which is rare, because normally the first victim is the biggest threat. It would have been dad. But they lured the sister in and tried to kill her and were not able to kill her. Then they stabbed mother to death. Then they stabbed father to death. Then he went on, which he doesn't like to talk about this part, he went on to kill several of his siblings. He stabbed to death a 12-year-old, a 7-year-old, a 5-year-old. I mean, these are 12, 7, and 5. These are children. And they're stabbed 20-something times each all over their bodies. And I asked him about that, and he really didn't know why. And I asked him several times on and off camera. He really didn't know why, but he didn't want to talk about those crimes. Those were really hard for him to talk about. Those, I believe, haunt him, his own siblings. And I asked him why he didn't kill his 2-year-old sister. And he just didn't know why. So it's amazing that two of them did survive this bloodbath and have lived to talk about it. Robert doesn't like to talk about the murder of his siblings because he knows, and I know, that that is really evil.
Is there a certain order that these kids kill people, or is it random? Like with his family, was he like, I want to kill my dad at the top, or my mom? And then do the kids, like, I'm so curious, like, why in that order? Or is it random?
I always kind of, like, think through this, like, okay, so mom and dad are dead. And that's probably who you're really mad at, right? So a lot of these kids will kill their mom and dad. Like Ronald DeFeo from the Amityville Horror House. He kills his mother and father. That's who you're really upset at. And then a lot of times they will go on to kill all their siblings. And this happens quite often. And I think there's two reasons why these killers kill their siblings. Number one, they don't want to get caught. So like Robert Bevert thought he would get away. So in a sense, he's killing all the witnesses. And he believes the two-year-old who was still sleeping wouldn't know who did this. The number one reason is they're witnesses. You have to kill the witnesses if you think you're going to get away. Number two, sometimes they will kill their siblings because they don't want them to grow up without a father and mother. There's a kid named Clay Shrout that killed his parents and then he killed his siblings in Kentucky. Then he went on to the school and took a class hostage. And he said he killed his sisters because he didn't want them to grow up without a mother and a father.
What was Robert's brother Michael's role in all this? He doesn't talk about him that much. He almost protects him, it seems like.
You know, there were reports that Michael was involved, and there were some reports that Michael stabbed his mother. He participated in that crime. But Robert is saying, no, he was not involved in any of the murders. He was kind of helping plan it. He was kind of helping set it up. He lured one of the brothers here or there. You know, he was kind of involved in that way. Some people are suspicious because they know the knife that Michael had, and they believe that that knife may have been used on the mother.
Phil, you talk a lot about several signs of a probable teen killer. Can you go over those with us and explain that?
I can. I've been doing this for a long time. I've been studying juvenile homicide for really 30 years. And I've been early on struggling, why do teenagers commit murder? Why do juveniles kill? And I've come up over the years with 13 causes, and I kind of ranked them in the order that I saw them. So the number one cause is no father or abusive father, which you see may possibly happening here in this case. You see unstable home, possibly also happening here, possible abuse in the home. These kids are victims of bullying, especially at school. They're obsessed with violent entertainment. Robert loved violent entertainment. They're obsessed with deadly weapons. Robert loved deadly weapons. They have suicidal ideologies. They use illegal drugs, alcohol, and medications. They have a desire to be famous. We know Robert wanted to be a famous killer. They're involved in cults, gangs, and hate groups. There is peer pressure from others. In that case, it would have been Michael being peer pressured by Robert. Poverty plays a role, possibly here. Lack of spiritual guidance and discipline in their lives, and possibly mental illness. And I always tell people you have to have more than one cause to become a teen killer. I like to say between 3 and 6 or 3 and 8. And if you look at this list that I just shared with you from all of my books, Robert probably has 3, 5, 7, 8 of these causes. We would call them textbook. Once we identify a potentially dangerous and violent juvenile, we want to start looking for warning signs. Can we spot the warning signs and get Robert help and Michael help before it's too late? Things like cruelty to animals, starting fires, bedwetting, drawing violent pictures, you know, writing violent stories, obsession with violent entertainment, obsession with guns, bombs, and knives. And Robert had all these. Robert was writing stories. Robert was, you know, talking about crazy things that he had planned. And his parents knew this. And because they didn't take action, it cost them their very lives. Next, we're going to speak with Dr. Zelana Montminy, a behavioral scientist and author of 21 Days to Resilience. She also appears regularly on Access Hollywood, The Today Show, Good Morning America, The Dr. Oz Show, just to name a few. And we will have our final conversation with Robert Bevert. Next, we're going to speak with Dr. Zelana Montminy, a behavioral scientist and author of 21 Days to Resilience. Hi, Dr. Z. Let's jump right in. What's your reaction to the crimes of Robert Bevert?
I mean, it's heartbreaking. I feel like, you know, especially when children and young people do such horrific things, it's just particularly heartbreaking because I can't help but think that something in their childhood or some experience has affected them in such a profound way that they would be pushed or sort of inspired to do things like that.
We've seen so many tragic cases like this. What do you see in your experience that could possibly lead someone to do this?
You know, it's hard to say, and I hesitate to make sort of blanket statements and generalizations about what could push someone to do this. I mean, there are people who are born with a chemical disparity in their brain and, you know, have a tendency towards sociopathy than others. But for a child, extreme abuse and neglect that can cause, you know, developmentally certain markers to be missed, and the lack of connectivity, the lack of feeling like a caregiver is attentive toward you, can really create sort of this block and potentially be a precursor for behaviors like this.
Let's talk about the media, violent video games and violent content, and how that may or may not have affected Robert.
Evidence that shows Robert was getting into violent video games and things like that. I mean, decades of research sort of examining gaming and violence somewhat failed to reach consensus on what is sort of the causal link, or if there is any at all, between playing video games and acts of violence in the real world. But there is a growing body of evidence that shows that video gaming can affect the brain and cause changes in regions of the brain, but those changes aren't necessarily negative. A lot of them have to do with sort of their ability to manage information. But gaming has been shown to be addictive, so it's hard to know how much he was gaming. But in gaming addicts, where they're doing it, you know, so much, there are functional and structural changes that happen in the brain, and we're seeing a lot of those structures change that are associated with feeling pleasure and motivation. So, for example, you know, if he's playing video games a lot, it sort of changes his ability to respond to, you know, cravings and kind of have the ability to problem solve effectively, potentially. So it's really complex, but if you look at the early research on the effects of viewing violence on television, especially among children, they have found a desensitizing effect and potential for aggression. You say this all the time, Phil. I mean, there are a variety of factors that can contribute to, you know, going on these kinds of horrific sprees. So it's not just playing a video game or watching a violent show. There are multiple factors. And what we're seeing in the research, especially in video game violence, is that a lot of it sort of fails to control for other variables, such as mental health issues or family life, or, for example, levels of abuse growing up or neglectfulness, which obviously impact results. So I guess the consensus now is that children who are already at risk, yes, may be more likely to choose to play violent video games, but it's not the games themselves in a vacuum that are causing, you know, these behaviors.
And lastly, let's talk about Robert's younger brother, Michael, and his involvement in all of this.
I think it really depends on the relationship the brothers have, but it sounds like the older brother had quite an influential relationship with Robert. And, you know, we just don't know what's going on here. Maybe he was trying to impress him. Maybe he was trying to show him that, you know what, I'm no longer the weak younger brother, or, you know, his father would favor one brother over the other. And, you know, Robert had had enough of that. I mean, there's a million ways that we can cut this, but I think an older brother can certainly have a big, you know, pull on a younger brother.
Thanks so much, Dr. Z.
Thanks so much, Phil. Great to talk to you.
Coming next, we will have our final conversation with Robert Bever. Your brother, Michael, he got a pretty long sentence as well, didn't he?
He got 5 lives with parole, running consecutive, and plus 28 years for assault.
So will he have a chance to be released?
I mean, what they're doing is unconstitutional. I don't know if it's unconstitutional, but it's against the law because he was only 16 at the time, and they basically ensured that he'll never, with his current sentence, if nothing changes, he'll never get out of prison. It's like life without. And so I hope he has an opportunity. And, you know, I tell everybody, he's the good one. He was the one who, he felt more emotion than I did. He got angrier about stuff and said things that he didn't mean. But he's more of a normal person than I am. I think if you had to compare it, it would be like a Columbine relationship, depression and psychopathy. And I was a really bad influence on him. He never had any friends besides me, and he didn't like me for a long time. But I started drawing him in, and I was just a bad influence for him, and I think he's doing a lot better now.
Did you try to kill yourself when you went to the jail when you got arrested?
Yeah, I've tried a couple times to kill myself. I've I've tried hanging myself twice, and I've tried cutting myself.
So have you dealt with that now? Do you want to live, or are you still struggling with that?
You know, I take a lot of medication now. I take a lot of medication, and an important thing that I've come to realize about myself is that I need to be taking a really strong antidepressant twice a day. Otherwise, I'd start feeling suicidal and violent again. Hmm. And right now, I'm all right, but those thoughts still cross my mind. But now I can tell myself, no, we're not going to think about that.
Hmm. Are you remorseful for your crimes?
I'm gonna have to live with it for the rest of my life, remembering everything I did and knowing that my family is that I put an end to my family. And you know, you say it's not been that long, but for me, I try to imagine my brother at 18 years old, my brother at 16 years old, my sister at 11 years old. Mm-hmm. And it's terrible. Hmm. There's no word.
Wow. What's prison like for you? You went to prison 18, 19. What's prison been like so far? Has it been tough? Is it hard? Have you survived? How's it gone?
I had to learn some things at first because when I first came to prison, people treated me a little bit differently than they do now. Maybe they thought something was really wrong with me mentally, but there was a lot of joking about who I'd kill next and, you know, stuff like that. But people looked out for me and people were, you know, for some reason compassionate. But now that I've gotten older, I've had a few times where people have just been like, wow, you're a piece of shit. I'll kill you. And I understand that, and so I just live with it. But since nothing's happened to me so far, I think I'm doing all right.
So
I've learned how to socialize.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, I've learned how to talk to people, which I wasn't really good at out in the world.
How's your brother doing in prison?
He has a job. He's going to school. He's going to church. He has friends. I think he's doing really well. I don't think he knows what he's missing because he never had a job out in the world. He never got to leave the house, so he doesn't know what he's missing. But he's making the most of it in here.
What could we have done to stop you, Robert? How could we have prevented this from happening?
I think an important thing to note was that I bought huge quantities, thousands of dollars worth of body armor and weapons when I had no job. And I think that that's a really big warning sign because people just don't do that. And I had told some people on the internet what I was fixing to do. And they didn't take me seriously, or they begged me not to, but they never told the police. And as much as I hate to say it, I think that if somebody says they're going to do something like that, it has to be investigated by the police.
So if someone would have called, they might have intervened with you, right?
Well, I hate hearing stories about these kids who are in high school who had been talking about shooting it up, and you never know whether they were serious or not, and they end up going to jail for it. But in my case, I had a long history of something that a lot of people don't know. I don't think anyone really knows it except people who know me. I had over 100 Facebook accounts, and wow. I spent all day on them. And I wrote stories, and most of the stories I wrote for the roleplay groups on Facebook were extraordinarily violent. Mm-hmm. And that was all I did all day. And towards the end there, instead of it being supposed to be being like insane clown posse, shocking and funny, it was this very realistic, very messed up catharsis. It was like me living it out in the writing, and everybody was worried about me. And then I finally just stopped writing and I started making it a reality. And I had told two people. I had an internet boyfriend who I had told. He said, well, you just need to be in a mental institution. And he pretty much stopped talking to me after that. He thought it was fucked up, but he didn't do anything about it. And I had another friend who I was trying to make plans to move to New York to live with him. I was going to take the money I had earned from the call center, and I was going to get an apartment, and he was going to help me pay for it. and we were just gonna like, but we were gonna be like best friends. And I told him that I felt like killing somebody. He said, "Please don't." He said, "You have so much to give the world." And I was just like, "I'm sorry." And I blocked him.
So people could have intervened and helped you, but they.
Even my parents could have, but I guess they were scared of me. I don't know, because they knew very well that I was buying some body armor. They didn't know about the knives, but they had asked me, and they had asked my brothers, you know, did I own any guns? So they knew. They kind of saw that was where it was going, but I managed to keep a lid on it long enough that they weren't able to do anything about it.
Wait, do you have a girlfriend? Are you gay, or do you have a girlfriend?
I'm bisexual.
Okay.
I've had boyfriends and girlfriends. Right now, I'm in a serious relationship with a girl, and so I've stopped messing around with guys. But in the past, I've had both.
So you have a relationship with the female that talks to you, and
you have 1 minute remaining.
You communicate with her on a regular?
Yeah.
Well, anything else you'd like to say to the world? Your last thoughts? Anything else you'd like to say to people as a warning or whatever?
It's not what your mind makes it out to be. It's fantasy is nothing. It's not like that in real life. It's only like that inside your head. It's a delusion. The reality is a lot harder to deal with, and it's a lot more harrowing. It's not something that I would want someone to have to live with, because I sure as hell don't like it.
Hmm. If I need anything more, Robert, I'll reach out to you. Call me in a few days just to touch base with me, okay?
Okay.
Robert Bever, as you heard, killed his multiple members of his family. He has 2 surviving sisters who end up in foster care. Robert battles suicidal tendencies. He's tried to kill himself multiple times, both in the county jail and in prison. So how did Robert Bever and Michael Bever get caught? In the midst of this chaos, when you have 2 killers or 2 people trying to control the scene and kill multiple victims, it's very hard to manage all these victims. Some of the victims ran into bathrooms and locked themselves in. And there is talk that Michael gave a phone to one of the younger victims to call the police, which he did. He was locked in a bathroom and he called 911. In the aftermath of that, Robert Bever broke into the bathroom and stabbed his brother to death. It was too late for Robert Bever. The 911 call had already been made. So they knew the police were coming. And so after they stabbed and killed everybody in the home, didn't know the older sister had survived immediately, but they knew they left a 2-year-old survivor who could not really talk about who did this. They then bailed out the back door of the house into the woods, and they were finally located by law enforcement and canines and arrested for this heinous crime. I imagine when the police showed up to this scene, they were shocked. The first person they came across was the 13-year-old survivor, and they realized very quickly, this is not a false alarm. This is a real call. Can you imagine the police show up, and there's a 13-year-old who's basically a child with her throat cut and multiple stab wounds all over her torso and her arms, screaming, "Save me, save me." Now that's something you won't forget. One of the things I see in talking to hundreds of teen killers and school shooters, there are always causes and there are always warning signs. There were always warning signs. And if people knew they were warning signs, we would have tried to stop the incident. But most people don't know what the warning signs are. So when they see the warning signs, they don't take it serious because they don't know how serious it is. Robert Bever was convicted of multiple murders and sentenced to prison for life without parole. He will never see the outside of a prison again. Thanks for listening to Where the Bodies Are Buried. And remember to subscribe to receive updates on new episodes. This podcast is produced by Grinning Dog and Audio Up.